Welcome back, world. You've entered the Shadow Nation with your host, Ghostman, and Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter.
I was just online polishing my chrome.
Polishing? That sounds so dirty, man. Polishing it. Hey, special thanks to our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Spreaker, the world's listening. Are you? They want to know. Check them out, Spreaker.com, Planet Paranormal, Geeky Antics Network, Serious Geeks, Silly Fun, GeekyAntics.net, and of course, our good friends out at Attentive Home Healthcare, AttentiveHHC.com, the SYL Project, Give, Share, Everybody Needs. Nathan. Everybody needs that love. Check them out, the SYLproject.org. Welcome back to studio. Sunday night. It feels so good, man. I don't know what to do. I'm here. I'm jazzing. It's fun. I can smell fall in the air.
You know, I was just trying to log in, Sean, to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter chat room.
Yeah.
Which, of course, people can find by clicking on our...
On our site
and going to listen live. But I was trying to get to it through my Chrome on my phone, and it wants me to accept a new program where they would be able to track my statistics.
Your statistics.
My statistics.
It's the shadow government.
Yeah. I like that.
It's the shadow government. Yes. Well, what are you worried about? You're a radio host. They're going to track you back to your radio show.
Well,
I mean, honestly, man. Honestly.
I mean, all those websites that we look at during the week, some of them are a little freaky, yeah, man.
Well, they're all for show studies that we do. Hey, have you heard about this? You know, I've heard about it earlier this week, guys, Shadow Nation. We are running out of bees.
Yes, we are.
Well, I mean, well, you know, what's going on with this, man? They're all over my house. We moved. We changed studios. They're all over the studio. Every time I go out, I've been stung like three times this year, and they've been stung in the last 20 years. I've been stung three times in the last month and a half. But for some reason.
Are those bees or are those wasps?
Well, no, they're bees. The little, you know, red and black.
Are they honeybees or are they?
How do I know? I didn't stop to ask them. They had their, you know, black and yellow and. The bees.
Were they fuzzy or were they like sleek and
No.
With
hard shells? I know the difference between wasp and the bees. These were bees, bud. And they're pretty good sized bees, too. Maybe it's because the studio is out back of a golf course. Maybe they're something about the treatment of the lawn or something of the golf course. I don't know.
You got to remember this time of year, too. Mm-hmm. They're just about ready to go, like, tuck themselves away for the winter. So they're really struggling to get as much food in as they can. Yeah. What color is your house, Sean?
White.
Okay, white's not bad. During the summer, you know, I inspect people's houses and treat for wasps and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'll always get this phone call going, we have wasps crawling in our house. Oh. And they'll send me the address.
Yeah.
But I don't even have to look for the address. I'll just drive down the street and look for the yellow or light tan house. Yeah. And I guarantee you, that's the house where the wasps are crawling in.
That's crazy.
They just love yellow and light tan houses.
Yeah. And wasps, man, their sting is worse. The name, wasp, it just hurts worse, you know? It hurts worse. I remember when I was a kid, Dad, we used to go to church a lot. Dad did a lot, and he was heavy into all the stuff in the 80s. Remember when, you know, Ozzy was biting off bats' heads and dripping blood?
That was an accident.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, and, you know, and Gene Simmons had the tongue with the blood coming out, and everybody believed. And there's a – I remember going to school, and I love my dad. I'm proud of him. He's very strong in his convictions. And I remember Wasp, the band. Remember the rock and roll band? Wasp,
right?
They were playing Market Square Arena, which in Indianapolis used to be our big place where our professional basketball team, the Pacers, played, and every Elvis performed. His last performance was at Market Square Arena in downtown Indianapolis, off Market Street. And I was on the bus the next day, and the kids had a newspaper. Don't ask me why third, fourth graders would have newspaper, but there was one on there. I don't know if they got it from the bus driver or what, but on the front page was a picture of a bunch of people standing there, and it was my pop. He was standing out in front of Market Square Arena with a bunch of other, you know, folks picketing. And Dad signed, you know, because I'm sitting on the bus with all these kids, man, with their blue jean jackets, with their, you know, ironed on Metallica and Wasp and Motley Crue patches, and they all smell like cigarettes because they're stealing them from their old man and smoking them at the bus stop. And I'm sitting there in my khakis and my nice shoes and stuff, and here they show a picture. It says Danny Burris, and it shows a picture of my old man wearing a scarf, a hat, a jacket, and holding a gigantic sign that says Wasp. We are sexual. We are sexual perverts. Trying to get people to go away from. Oh man. Oh, Dad, I love you. He made life so much easier for me trying to fit in. Love you, Dad. I love you. Love my old man. That was his conviction, though. He thought Wasp was sexual perverts. Maybe you look them up. Maybe they are. Did you ever track Wasp? Let's see what happened to Wasp. Maybe they turned into sexual perverts.
They were a hair band during the 90s or 80s, Sean. Of course they were sexual perverts.
Safe to say. Let's see here. I don't know. Whatever happened to Wasp, the band? Anybody in chat, tell us.
I can't tell because I can't get in because my Google Chrome is polishing.
Oh, my God. Did you go ahead and accept and tell them they could spy on you?
No, I will not accept that.
Huh.
Hey, by the way, going back to that comments about the bees you were saying before, a lot of people often quote Einstein as having said, if the bees disappear off the face of the earth, man would only have 4 years left to live.
That's bad, right?
But that's actually never been able to be proven that Einstein actually said that. What they do believe Einstein said is if the bees disappeared off the surface of the globe, then hundreds of thousands of plants would not stand a chance. They would not survive because without the pollination, they would not be able to grow. But there are other pollinators out there as well. So there's hummingbirds, there's butterflies, even wasps do pollinate plants. So
yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe we're saved then by the hummingbird will save us. Yeah. What's up, Mike? Yeah, Mike in the chat room says wasps sucked anyway. You're right.
Oh man,
Mike, I went to the archives band members page, and we're not going to say they suck, but Blackie Lawless apparently was the lead vocalist, bass guitar, rhythm guitar. He still sings and writes for the band, but apparently they're still out there kicking. But I was hoping to find something quick and, you know, like they all, you know, burnt people alive and it was found in their basement and went to jail. And
nothing like that.
I could say, Dad, you were right, but
they wore like they used an entire can of Aquanet to do their hair and wore lipstick, Sean. How much danger could they have been? Well, then again, that guy from Silence of the Lambs did that too, so that was a
hello
scary.
Clarice. Nah. Yeah, whatever, dude. Yeah, well, anyway, that was my old man. He used to do that. I think he did Ozzy's too one time. So hey man, call it like I see it. But yeah, so a bunch of stuff's going on. I was watching this video on Facebook I seen this week, and of course everybody knows that I have a daughter. I have a 7-year-old daughter, Addie, and she has started having an interest in young men.
No, that is not acceptable.
That's not. Uncle Nathan and I will not permit this to be allowed. No. I tell her the first test when she starts dating, can you imagine they walk into the studio, see Alien Bob, 8 foot tall, Alien Gray in the studio, Michael Myers mask, Jason mask, posters everywhere of Ghostbusters, and they'll be like, what's all this stuff your pop's into? Yeah, they definitely got to be into the hauntings and the spookiness.
Well, I recommend, Sean, my brother's technique in dealing with young men wanting to date his daughters.
Oh, yeah.
The rule was the first date always had to be at home, and it had to be dinner with the family.
That's not bad.
And the boy had to come early so he could help my brother cook.
Right.
This allowed my brother to get to know him and also allowed the young man to learn about my brother's ability and affinity for knives.
Right.
Up your butt, Joe.
You talk to a young man about how he was gonna, what his plans are to do with your daughter while you're chopping a carrot in front of him. And suddenly he has a whole new respect for the father.
What'd you do for a Klondike bar? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, we started talking about that, and it was just, I seen this video, it caught my eye, and there's a guy, and he's sitting on the couch, and he's cleaning his gun, his daughter opens the door, and she's come home from school, and she said, Dad, my boyfriend's, I want to introduce you to my boyfriend. He says, who? She says, my friend. And he pops the gun back, you know, he clicks it, and he says, is he here? She shuts the door and says, no. He goes, okay, baby, lock the door. There's clowns and ISIS outside. It was great. But, you know, he was in there cleaning his shotgun and his handgun. It was epic. Clowns and ISIS. They're everywhere, man. They're everywhere.
Yes, yes, yes. And it, well, and it's important to always have a gun being cleaned on the table when a young man comes to call. Mm. It's I don't know.
But our nation is going crazy right now. The world's going crazy, man. There's a clown craze. And I haven't heard about it anywhere other than the United States. We're that cool. We're that cool that we have a clown terrorizing group in our country. Nobody yes. could say that ever again. Ever.
Well, you know, terrorists never like to show their faces.
They are a bunch of clowns anyway. Yes. A couple of them been getting shot to death, I guess, out there playing around. Yeah.
The clowns? I know they've been being chased by cops. We've discussed that.
Well, yeah, and there's more to it.
There is. Tell me more, Sean.
You heard that music, guys. That means it's time for the Shadow Nation's News Hour with the Ghostman Demon Hunter. Right,
that's
Nathan?
That's right, folks. It's Ghostman and Demon Hunters in the news. That's weird news that we pick right out of the paper because we like the titles. Of course, we haven't read the stories yet, so we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's the G&D drinking game. Of course, we are recommending that if you are listening to the show while driving in your car, that you do not play the G&D drinking game. We will not bail you out. And if you have anything important to do this evening, we recommend, please, listen responsibly.
We were talking about the clowns, though, right?
Yes, we were talking about clowns.
We should probably try to go into a clown-type story, then.
Did you find any clown-type stories? Because I did not find any.
You know what? It's funny, Nathan. I found it just for you. And I'll start off tonight with the Shadow Nation news.
Please do.
News for and by people in the shadows. I don't know. Something like that, right? Shadow Nation, shadow people. Anyway, we probably need to talk about that a little bit more with the listener base, what we're doing there.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me try to pull up this story, Nathan. It's pulling up right now. And actually, it comes from our good friends at Navigation News and iHorror.com. Authorities across the U.S., Shadow Nation, issuing a warning to citizens buying Halloween clown costumes. You didn't hear about this?
I did not.
Jesus, man. I could save your life. Nathan and I could
please,
be saving
because I was going to be a clown for Christmas, obviously.
For Christmas?
For Christmas.
Holy clown, Christmas, man. Anyway, a few twisted scumbags have ruined it for the rest of us on this Halloween. Or if you happen to suffer from, oh God, here we go. Get ready. Ready? Colorophobia. This is probably
drink, folks.
Yeah, drink up, guys. This is probably good news for you, as you may or possibly may not be aware of the recent threats that have spread all across the United States involving some highly likely sick individuals wearing clown costumes, roaming about wooded areas, attempting to lure children towards them. The trouble first started in South Carolina, as Nathan and I covered that in previous weeks, you guys might remember, and has quickly spread over the past month to at least 15 states across the North American map. The latest clown threats range from reports from attacks from a man dressed in a clown getup in Ohio, as well as witnesses spotting one wielding a kitchen knife in the streets, to an incident in Pennsylvania where a 10th grader was fatally stabbed after a fight with someone wearing a clown mask. I didn't hear about this one, Nathan.
I did not.
A 10th grader was fatally stabbed after a fight with someone wearing a clown mask, and reports of clowns chasing children in the streets hurling objects at them. Anyway, and it says, this is way out of hand. I would agree. And then it's got a big creepy clown picture, and he's pointing to you going, come here, come here. Anyway, no thank you, Mr. Clown. According to the reports in several states, authorities are taking this matter very seriously and have issued a warning to those who plan on dressing up as a painted nightmare this Halloween. As a matter of fact, they're recommending you scrap that idea altogether, Nathan. That's right.
I recommend you scrap it.
Yeah. Pasco County Sheriff Chris Noko in Florida. Drink up, guys. In Florida, recently spoke with his local news station, issuing an advisory for anyone even contemplating a clown costume this Halloween. Here's what he said. People are fed up. They're tired of seeing demonstrations and riots. They're sick and tired of terrorist threats. Now they've got to deal with these damn clowns things going on. I got to read that again. Now they've got to deal with these damn clown things going on. I agree, Sheriff. They're saying if one of these clowns comes onto my property, they're going to get shot. The kids who think, hey, this is just a joke, I warn you, Don't get caught up in this movement. I didn't know it was a movement. All you're going to do is get yourself hurt or get someone else hurt. I would highly recommend do not use clown outfits as your preferred choice. Go with something else. To be perfectly candid, the authorities have a valid point, and the concern for citizens' generally well-being is certainly solid. So if you plan on dressing up as Pennywise or nabbing a Rob Zombie 31 mask this year, you may want to reconsider for safety purposes. And then someone says, may I suggest the Trump mask? Holy hell, that thing is stuff of nightmares. Ah! Yeah, that's great. Thanks, I horror. Anyway, yeah, that's actually you could go as Hillary and that'd be, but anyway, you know.
Well, then you might get shot as a clown. Personal opinion, folks. Oh! Personal opinion. Don't go.
That was perfect.
The hate
Thank
mail
you.
Comes rolling
Thank
in.
Thank you. Oh, it's beautiful.
Don't you dare try to stop
me. Either way, I'm not thrilled. But okay, Sean, I guess. We all remember those Monty Python skits where somebody gets hit in the face with a fish.
You mean to tell? Do you mean a coconut can migrate? Certainly not.
Well, apparently, God is running around smacking people in the face with fish now.
Yes, God.
Yes, God. It's me.
Yes.
Nathan, don't hit me with a fish. It's Mysterious me. Catfish falls from sky and hits woman in the face.
Oh.
It's a bird, it's a plane, it's a fish. A Philadelphia woman says she was knocked to the ground by a 5-pound fish, catfish, yeah, falling from the sky that struck her in the face.
Serves her right.
Lisa Labrie
was
on her way to the Labor Day exercise class near Philadelphia Museum of Art when she was suddenly slammed in the face by something, Labrie told
Daddy,
the Philadelphia Inquirer. It was like, wow. I was freaking out, she recalled. Several news outlets surrounding have a drink, folks. Several news outlets suggest that the 16-inch catfish fell from the grasp of a bird flying in the sky above. Labrie suffered a small cut under her left eye.
Oh my God.
And some swelling from the flying fish. She was also hit with a distinct odor. I smelled bad afterwards, she told CBS Philadelphia.
Good morning, ladies.
I smelled disgusting.
Oh, it's terrible.
Of course, nobody wants to be smacked in the face by a fish falling from the sky.
Why not?
But Labrie at least is making the best of it.
Yeah.
It could have been much worse, she told the Inquirer.
Yeah.
It could have been a child. She could have got hit by a child falling from the sky?
Yeah, child could have.
What if it had been a child? It was not a fun experience, but there are some worse things that could have happened. It's probably one of the strangest things that ever happened to me in my life. She should hang out with us more often, Sean. More stranger things like that.
Shut my eye out.
We hit people in the face with fish all the time.
What happened to the good old days of humor? I mean, you know, somebody got hit. That was people bought rubber fish to hit people with. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would die for something like that to happen. While we're doing one of our stage things, when we used to do stage shows, if a fish would just start flying, I would claim it. I would say, yeah, we did that. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Huffington Post. That was a good story.
Yeah, that was good. Thanks, Huff Post. Drink twice, guys. Anyway, I'm up next, yes?
Go ahead.
Mother. Are you ready for this one?
I am ready.
I don't think you are, but we're going to do it anyway. Hold on a second. Mother sues hospital after son turns gay from flu shot. I kid you not. I kid you not.
Oh, wait. I got my flu shot yesterday. Now I'm worried.
How you feeling, pal? Mother sues hospital.
I'm just fabulous.
That's terrible. Don't do it. Don't do it. Mother sues hospital after son turns gay from flu shot. Thanks, viralwhatever.net. Oh, that viralfeed.net. Thanks, guys. Anyway, San Francisco Andrea Benacci, drink, the mother of a 16-year-old teenager who recently received a flu shot at San Francisco General Hospital, is suing the hospital after she noticed extreme changes in her son's sexual preferences. Yes, I'm not kidding you, man. This is hardcore news here, right? The single mother of two blames the hospital for giving her son a vaccine shot, which allegedly has made him, it says, queer. But is it gay or queer? You can't say queer. It's what it is.
Well, if it's in the paper.
It's in the paper, guys. I can't help it. You know, I don't agree with it, but who knows? I don't know. My son was perfectly normal before the shot, she told reporters. I don't have a problem with other people being gay. Don't get me wrong. But he's my son. That doesn't sound bad. Andrea Bonacci. That's what the mother said. The doctor told me. Oh, drink up, guys. Bonacci. Anyway, I could be wrong again. Drink up. The doctor told me there could be some secondary effects to the shot. Either fever or make him short-tempered for a few days. But they never told me he'd turn gay. She explained, visibly furious over the whole affair, Nathan. She's very...
Well, I think it was really just a short-tempered thing, Sean. I think that, you know, she turned him gay, and then the shot made him short-tempered, so he didn't mind showing her that he was gay. I think that's what it is. It's all her fault.
Says the young teenager's 83-year-old grandmother, Fidelia Benici. Drink up, guys. Bears witness to the tremendous changes her grandson's personality has suffered since the vaccine shot. And it has a very distraught grandmother on the front page. Number three, from the quarterback to the cheerleader, he had been going out with this beautiful young Italian girl. Good job, pal. For the past 2 years, they were such a cute couple. She remembers visibly distraught. Anthony used to be such a good boy. He came to church every Sunday with us without complaining. But now, since the vaccine shot, he is... barely recognizable. I wish he had never left for the hospital.
It's all the makeup.
She says she wishes that he... She wishes that he would...
Don't you dare try to stop
she
him.
Said I
She's
get
trying
you on
to snipe
one.
Him. She wishes he had never left for the hospital that morning. She admittedly said in tears in the weeks following the visit to the hospital. The young teenager has put an end to his relationship with his girlfriend of 2 years and has since then, well, they didn't tell me it was so serious, like 2 years, yeah, 2 years, and has since then started to dress in feminine ways. And his family believes he is already in a relationship with an older man. You've got to understand, Shadow Nation, Nathan, you got to understand. I have nothing against being gay at all, explains the mother, but my son was 100% normal before. He was the leading quarterback before he quit his high school team 2 weeks ago.
Now he's the cheerleader.
He quit. This is crazy. Listen, that's where it's going. He quit his high school. He was the head quarterback. He quit his high school team 2 weeks ago, and I caught him red-handed wearing cheerleader clothes. Oh, man, this is shit. This ain't real. This can't be. Anyway, she caught him wearing cheerleader clothes the other day. It's like God has punished my family, she says. Or something.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she says, or something. She's angry. I'm not.
I can't imagine.
I'm not reading this. This is crap. This ain't real.
This can't be real.
Yeah, thanks, viral feed. That's why you don't believe what you read, guys.
You know what? That woman needs to be hit in the face with a fish.
What do you got next there, bruh? Bruh? That's what the kids are saying
now. How was Exorcist this week?
Oh, man. You know, I'm telling you, I've said it before. You can't remake classics. You can't remake Jaws. You can't remake
You weren't happy
Exorcist.
This week?
I was not, sir. I was
See,
I
was
skeptical.
Happier with this week than I was last week.
Last week had the terror, and you know, I talked about this earlier today. You go ahead and say what you're going to do, and I will come back with my rebuttal, sir.
No, I want us to talk back and forth on this, because I was watching it this week. And I was a little like I told you, the end of last week, I felt a little let down. I felt like they were jumping the shark way too early in the series.
Yeah.
And this week I came into it thinking they've got to mellow it out a little bit. It's, if they go that deep that fast, this can't last.
Right.
You know,
and it rhymes.
Watching it, I was sitting there going, this is awesome. I'm liking the subtlety of this. I'm liking the fact that one of the priests who is the real exorcist seems to have lost his faith and so no longer has, you know, power over demons. I'm enjoying the history into his life. I'm enjoying all of this stuff. And then at the end, you find out there's an army of demons ready to take over the world.
Yeah. Well,
It's definitely going in an interesting direction. I'm just this whole build up, and in the last 30 seconds of every episode, they're going to give us some enormous shocker. I'm not thrilled with. But I did like this week. I liked the subtlety of this week's episode.
Right. And can I just say the whole thing, the good versus evil, man versus devil. The fight from within, you know, the battle for the soul. The imagery from the Exorcist movie, the old Father Dyer, Father Dyer. Marin, Father Marin, standing in the street lamp and the light shining down with the little girl's image. And ooh, it's creepy, right? Yep. And it wasn't so much the person, not the shell, not the vehicle that the demon possesses. What, to me, even with all the ghost stuff we do and the places we go, the fear for me doesn't come from the human, but the fact behind what it is that is possessing. A demon is an entity, mm-hmm. a per thing that has never existed in human form, has never have lived on this planet as we know living, right? It's in the cosmos.
I'm okay with you there. I'm going.
Okay. So the ancient strength and wisdom and wickedness, if you will, of a demon, and I'm not putting him on a pedestal, they can kiss ass, but what I'm saying is the ancient awe, if you get what I'm saying, to stand mm-hmm. before something and do battle with only your book and your faith, that is what scares the dragon, the unholy three-headed dragon, the beast, right? We deal with idiots every day that may or may not be possessed, that are out cutting people's limbs off and killing, and idiots and kill this and that and blah, whatever. It gets old, you sweep it away, and it all gets better, and then it comes back every 100 years or whatever. But
you've got to remember, Sean, we just can't go around expelling demons anymore. These are no longer considered demonic possessions. These are considered undocumented demonic Americans. Mm-hmm. So
that's crazy. They haven't been vetted, apparently. Heaven's not doing its vetting anymore before it lets people cross the veil. But no, what I'm saying is, you get what I'm saying. It's the ancient evil. And you as a human, immortal, that is lucky to live 100 years, lucky to live 80 years anymore, standing before this massive being with all its wisdom and evil and wickedness, that is more terrifying to me than seeing
people
creeping down the alleyway with knives.
This is a TV show, and I think they need to focus. They're following The Walking Dead on this, and they're not making the story about the demon, which I said last week they can't do. This week they're making it about the family. We're getting to know the family at this point, so that when the big shoe drops, we have a connection to the family, and we want to see them survive. We want to see them get through this.
Right.
And we are going to be on the edge of our seats trying to decide whether and, trying to figure out what's going to happen next. And because they're using such subtlety at this point, that to me is a good thing. And I, we have been kind of explained what the knife hacking wielding people really are. This is part of the demonic apocalypse. Uh-huh. So in my opinion, it was a good episode.
Well, there you go. That's what you feel. And, I definitely got to give them an A for effort. They're definitely trying, and you got to love that, because anything with The Exorcist attached to it,
yeah.
I'm for, but it's just, I don't know. And I know the whole thing is, humans, the devil, hell need not open wide for devils to walk among us. They're among us every day, right? They're in people, evil molesters and people that want to rape and murder. But I just, that face, that unknown face that hides behind the eyes of the possessed, that's the battle,
Hey, I got to ask you, the guy in the stands at the soccer game and who shows up later on, do you think anybody else can see him?
No, they can't. It actually showed, wasn't the priest looking through the window and she was talking to herself?
The father was looking through the window.
Right, that's true. But he could be crazy. I mean, he definitely suffered.
Well, that's the thing. He's definitely suffering from something. But do you think that he's suffering from something due to the demons?
I do.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. I think we're going to find that out.
Will he actually be a conduit from heaven, because he's already provided advice? Or is he trying to... As the Father Merrick said, you're being played,
Yeah.
You're dealing with forces that you can't even begin to understand. So are the demons playing these guys, or are they just or is there a little help coming from the other side?
Yeah.
Personally, guys, I enjoy the show. I hope people start to watch it so we can talk a little bit more of it without spoiling it for people.
Yeah, so there's so much we can't say, but definitely with the demon thing. And you guys tell me if I'm wrong. Get on our Facebook page tonight. Get on our Twitter. GhostTheDemon.com, all that stuff out there, guys. Let us know your opinions on this stuff. We value your opinion. We do. We really do. But, hey, man, we got to get ready to go to break and play our music. I mean, we're 4 minutes past.
Oh, my goodness. We've got a guest waiting on the other line.
Yeah. No, Steve's going to be in the green room tonight. Yeah.
He's going to be in the green room?
In the green room. Hey, North Carolina fans can visit the Michael Myers house this Halloween. Did you hear about this?
No, I did not.
You know, that's what I'm going to do for the Halloween bash this year. I'm going as Michael Myers. Don't tell nobody.
You are. I won't tell anyone. Yeah. It'll be our little secret.
Michael Myers was my childhood evil, demonic person. That's what I was going to say about talking about the Exorcist movie. Why can't everybody be possessed then? Was Michael Myers possessed? Was he a demon? They never really talked about it. They shot him. Dr. Loomis shot him 6 times in the heart, remember, in the chest. He got up and ran away. Is he a demon?
Well, that's because he's pure evil.
Yes.
That's what the doctor said, that he's pure evil.
He did, but you still didn't answer my question. I could be a real evil person too, but I'm pretty sure if I take 6 slugs to the heart, I'm not going to be getting up anytime. You know what I mean? They never really broke that off and kind of, what are you guys getting, chat? Tell us what Michael Myers is. Is he human?
Have a drink, folks.
Anyway, if you guys want to, drink it up. If you guys want to see this house, it's really cool, actually. North Carolina fans can visit the Michael Myers house this Halloween. Thanks, Arrow.
Have you ever watched the specials about the Michael Myers house?
JoeBlow.com.
Where they went in and they filmed the entire movie. And then they went back and filmed that opening scene where they had the camera just kind of rolling in because they had to paint the house.
Oh, really?
Because the house was run down like it was through the whole movie. And then they went back and painted it, whitewashed the entire house so they could film that opening scene with the family still living there.
Yeah, and now we're going to tell you what happened to the house now, because a lot of people would say, well, why can't I just go see it? I want to see the original. Well, here's why, smart Alex. Okay, this comes from our friends at JoeBlow.com. The Michael Myers house from John Carpenter's Halloween is an iconic structure for horror fans all over the world, but it has been moved from its original shooting location and is now the office of a chiropractor who doesn't particularly want fans trespassing around all day. Disappointed fans might be in luck, however, thanks to Kenny and Emily Caperton, a couple who have built a life-size replica of the house in Hillsboro, North Carolina, where they live with their 2 cats and presumably a hearty collection of horror DVDs. A heart collection. That would be better, wouldn't it?
Collection. That would be really bad in the Michael Myers house.
Yeah, you can go there and visit their
Besides, do you really want to go to a chiropractor where, like, your back gets cracked in the house where Michael Myers?
I would do it every day. I would come out with my Myers mask on and be like, who's ready for an alignment? I would do it every day. I would. Anyway, screw them. In addition to cake, food trucks, and a visit from the big man Michael himself, the event will be hosting a double screening of The Mutilator with director Buddy Cooper and makeup artist Edmund Farrell in attendance. And, of course, I don't get this one, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, which on my end, not arguably, is the worst of the Halloween franchise, Season of the Witch. It's good, but it has nothing to do with Michael Myers.
No, it really didn't. And it was... I think it was their attempt, wasn't it, to get away from Michael Myers because they didn't have the rights or something at that point. And
I think they
were trying to continue the franchise without Michael Myers, which now that we look back on it was a really bad idea.
Yeah. That's what they said. You know, they're hardcore fans for picking that one out of the franchise.
Well, it's probably the only one they could afford to get the rights to play.
Anyway, you guys can go out there. You can check their out. Their official website, guys, it's October 31st, 2015 is when they do it. Movies, bonfires, tricks, treats, food trucks, and the boogeyman. You can check them out, guys. Just Google 7th Annual Halloween Bash at the Myers House in North Carolina. There you go. That is that, my friend. I would love to go out there just once.
It'd be interesting. Well, I could drive down there. It's probably about... North Carolina, that area of North Carolina, probably about an 8-hour, 9-hour drive for me.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know.
People tell me it's a 7-hour drive, but you know what? You get stuck in the traffic in Washington and forget it.
You know, Nathan, we never did this tonight. We're so off our game, guys. So off our game.
Anyway, tonight's guest.
That's it. Oh, you did it almost perfectly. Let's figure this out here. Who is tonight's guest, Nathan? Anyway.
Hey, you... I can't hear a word you're saying.
You can't hear nothing?
Now I can.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
What about now? Anyway.
Weren't you the guy who used to say, can you hear me now?
No. I'm now with Sprint. Tonight's guest, he's a Canadian, which that's wrong. He's an American actor, best known for his role as... Well, wait. We've had so many Canadian actors. Which one do I have here?
He's an American actor.
I'm looking for an American actor. Oh my God, which one is... Okay, here we go. Tonight's guest is an American film actor, director, writer, and writer known for his roles on the silver screen smash hits like James Wan's... Ready? I've messed it up enough. James Wan's Insidious, The Conjuring, and Flight. His work on television ranges from AMC smash hit The Walking Dead to the epic Cinemax HBO series Banshee. Graduate of the North Carolina School of Arts, tonight, Mr. Steve Coulter stops by the Shadow Studios to chat it up with your Ghostman and Demon Hunter right here on the Mystifying Oracle Radio Shadow Nation. Yeah, that's right. I guess we got to go to break now, huh? We're just kind of—I
guess so.
We're just kind of sandbagging.
Is he in the green room yet?
Yeah, Steve did. He just pulled up out front, so we got to get ready to do this. Anyway, guys, each week on this show, we play a new band, an independent band, one we know, we love, we support. The little man on the show, Nathan.
We do.
That's what I heard, anyway. Guys, we got to go to break. You already heard tonight's guest. Finally. That should be a great one. But the name of tonight's band is Read This Ever. Name of the song, Nathan, I Like Halloween.
I like Halloween.
You do?
I do.
I know. I'm not.
I know you. I know that's hard to believe.
I hate Halloween. That's my worst season ever, Halloween season.
I think I'm going to be a Jedi this year.
Are you going to do a Jedi?
I'm thinking about it. I mean, it's either that or the War Doctor from Doctor Who.
Ooh.
But then everybody will just think I'm wearing a big brown leather coat.
Nah. They'll love you. You'll be great. Anyway, Demon Hunter.
Ghost Man.
Shadow Nation, this is the band Read This Ever. Name the song, I Like Halloween. We'll be right back.
I Like Halloween. Yeah. this is Dan Aykroyd, also known as Dr. Ray Stantz, Ghostbuster, and you are listening to Ghost Man and Demon Hunter, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one and only Mystifying Oracle of Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Tonight's guest is an American film actor, director, and a writer, known for his roles on silver screen smash hits like James Wan's Insidious, The Conjuring, and Flight. His work on television ranges from AMC's smash hit, The Walking Dead, to the epic Cinemax HBO series, Banshee. Graduate of North Carolina School of Arts, Shadow Nation, help us welcome to studio Mr. Steve Coulter. Steve, what's up, buddy?
I'm not an American actor. I'm Canadian. Gotta start all over.
Let's do this over again.
That's American. Okay. Last week we announced our guest as being a Venezuelan actor, and he corrected us on that. He lived in Venezuela. He was born in America, and he wanted to make that clear. So yeah. We're just on a roll this
week. Guys, you really need to do your homework. It's very sad.
I had everything perfect.
This is going to be like 60 minutes in reverse. Oh, I'm going to nail you guys.
Tonight's guest is a Canadian film actor.
So it's going to be like every show. Okay.
That's yeah. Steve, first off, happy upcoming birthday, brother.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And happy birthday to you.
Yeah, we should sing it, huh? Oh, yeah. Bells and whistles.
We have received a letter, Sean. You and I are not allowed to sing on the show.
Is that it? No, but...
Oh, that's right. Then you got to pay Mildred and what's-her-name. They own the rights to
the happy birthday song. But, Steve, you're everywhere. It's epic. You're part of everything. You seem to be the priest, the judge, the... everything. So, you know, how did you get involved in this? How did you get with Juan and these classic projects that you're just in AMC smash hit, The Walking Dead? How did it start?
Yeah, it's really, the thing with James Wan is really kind of odd is that they shot the first Conjuring in North Carolina because they didn't have a big budget. And I just had one scene and it went well. He didn't like stop me and go, oh my God, you're great. He was like, oh, good work. You know, and then I left.
Yeah.
And then I got a call about a year later, I think, that said, James Wan's trying to find you. He has a role that he wants you to read for. He wants to get you in front of the studio, blah, 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 people for the Insidious 2. And so I did that. And then he's just so loyal. I think I've done 5 things with him in like 3 years. He's just so... Like even for when they did Furious 7, I live in Atlanta.
Yeah,
and he just sent me an email and said we're going to be shooting Furious 7. Do you want to be in it? I was like,
yeah,
okay. He actually had 2 roles for me.
Right.
He said since they're both small, he felt bad that they were small parts. And at first, the studio said no, you can't put him in 2 roles. And he said yes, I can.
Yeah.
And I ended up not doing the second one because of, Paul Walker's untimely, awful death.
Right,
and
terrible.
So they rewrote the end of it.
Terrible.
But that's the kind of guy he is. He's doing MacGyver now, and he tried to get me in that. I was shooting something else.
MacGyver.
But it's a lot of it, in acting, I guess in a lot of stuff, it's just luck. You get a chance, and then you hopefully try to do your best, and sometimes it pays off. And, yeah, he's been great. And then, Walking Dead. They do shoot that in Atlanta, and the role came up. I only read for it once before for the role of Herschel, and a much better actor played that role.
Wow.
Actually, Scott has been on our show as well.
Isn't he great?
He is incredible.
One of the greatest humans.
And, it was a really funny thing that happened when Scott came on our show, because he came on the show the night that his character died.
Oh, my God.
So we had booked him before his character actually died. And he's sitting there while we're doing the show and saying, I'm the only guy from The Walking Dead who has his own head in the closet. And
in a bag.
Accidentally slipped grocery that he was going to die that night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Spoilers. That's what we're working with you, Steve. We want some spoilers here, buddy. No.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I mean, one epic project to the next with your career here. I've done my homework, sir. I've been a huge fan of...
You have.
Of course, the Canadian thing kind of slipped past me, I guess. But, man, well, you live in Atlanta.
We also have this theory about the fact that people keep complaining about, you know, and we're not a political show, but we keep hearing these complaints about people, you know, coming over the southern border to steal all the American jobs. And I keep saying, no. I'm an actor, so trust me. It's Canadians. Not that you have to worry about. It's all the people from the north coming down and stealing our acting jobs.
They should have a wall. I came here when I was 2, so I don't know anything about Canada. I've just clung for some reason to my citizenship, which may come in handy on November 8th.
No,
that's another half hour.
You might have to tunnel under it. But you know, Steve, that brings up a good question. Why is it like X-Files, all the guests we've had on and stuff? A lot of the film industry now is heading, or they're filming in Canada. Is it a union thing or money? What is it?
They do partly. It was like in the 90s, there was a ton of production that went up there because it literally was just economic, because the Canadian dollar was like, you know, worth half of what the dollar was. So they just went up there a lot. Right. Then actually a lot of that production has actually come to Georgia, because Georgia has a 30% tax incentive. So that's why all the Marvel films are shot here now.
Yeah.
There's usually about 40 things filming here. It's like Los Angeles. There's always location finds everywhere. But yeah, it's always, they go where they can save their money. And that's why a lot of stuff went out. Yeah, X-Files, a bunch of stuff went to Vancouver for a long time. They still shoot up there because, again, depending on the value of the dollar,
right.
I guess they go up there. But they like it here because, you know, the airport and Pinewood Studios opened up a big 22-stage studio here, which is, you know, that's where Guardians of the Galaxy 2 shot here, and right. Ant-Man and Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
But, so, you know, I find it interesting that the studios all go where they can save money, because Sean and I have worked in television, and we're supposed to get a portion of the net, and there's never anything left at the end. It's
No, you got to get that a portion of the gross. Which, the net disappears.
We needed Steve to be our agent on there. That's one of the things in my homework I found. One of the most successful actors in the world. They have you listed on there, Steve. One of the gross income.
Really?
Yeah, you better have him shut that down, man.
I gotta check. I gotta call my accountant.
Yeah,
that's good to know.
People are gonna be looking for ransom.
Lunch is on me.
They're gonna want to kidnap you.
Apparently, per job, you're like the bigwig.
Yeah, what's going on here?
Well, that's good to know.
If we go back to TV, you're our agent.
It's fun to make a living, so it really is kind of fun to get to do just what you love.
Right.
And you always think that someone's gonna find out because you don't have like a grown-up's job. Like we were shooting, I guess I think it was Insidious 2, and Patrick Wilson and I were behind that scary red door, and they're spraying all this, you know, the fog and everything, and we both felt like two 11-year-olds, because he suddenly turned to me and he went, "Isn't this a great job?" Like, yeah, you just get to play pretend and ride horses and shoot guns and play. My daughter used to say, "Daddy, you just play dress up."
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, that's kind of what I do. I do feel like I'm going to be found out, and I'll have to go get a grown-up job in an office. Somewhere.
But it didn't start like that. You had to work real hard to get there. How did it start for you when you were a young kid? Were you sparked? What sparked your interest in
I did. I always pretended stuff. I was always, you know, you're playing war and you're playing cops, and I played Starsky and Hutch and all this stuff. And then I was very, very shy. I was like paralyzed with shyness, but if I did a play, like I did a play I think in junior high or something, and I went, oh, I like this, and for some reason I wasn't shy doing that, and it was like one of the few things I was good at. I was also a cartoonist, but I couldn't figure out how to make a living doing that, and ended up going to acting school, and then I went to New York for about 7 years. And I, you know, part of that, it's the only thing I really know how to do. And I really love it. And it just, you know, and it, you know, the first 10 years, you know, I drove trucks. I literally dug ditches. I worked in warehouses. I bartended. I was a bouncer at a folk music club.
What kind of people do you bounce at? Folk music?
drunk women from Long Island. Let me tell you, you have not had a fight until you've had a fight with a drunk woman from Long Island.
I don't know. I used to attend the bluegrass festivals, and I think I can argue that
there
point.
There you go. Yeah, we're talking about the same kind of people.
Well, you think of folk music, you know, good people, earthy, that they make love, not war.
Drunk people. There's a lot of drunk people. And they'd also tell me that the owner would come up and go, "Steve, there's a woman with a butcher knife sitting by the kitchen door. Could you please go get rid of her?" Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Scene one, act two. Steve gets cut.
You do a lot of stuff that isn't. That's one of the things. Like when you do get well paid or you're treated very well, it makes up for all the time you either worked for free or didn't get paid, or you had to do magic at a McDonald's, or
Well, did you ever get to the point, because, you know, we've been on the air 10 years and we've had superstars like yourself on, and we're lucky because we get you guys on here. We work hard to do it and we get to pick your brain and talk to you. And it's amazing. But we had that little brush with television where we had, of course, the reality TV craze. And they finally said, "Hey, you guys are kind of funny. We want you to do a paranormal show because you're into the ghost and the aliens and the horror genre. But don't be funny." Yeah. They said, "Don't be funny." So We said, "Well, that's what our show is about, man." But you know how Hollywood is. So it got canceled after our first season. And now we're back to working our regular jobs. Did you ever hit a point? Because, you know, I've been at Southwest Airlines for 16 years.
Yeah.
And I took off vacation time and everything to film that. And Nathan did as well. But did you ever hit a point where you're like, "You know what? This ain't going to happen. I'm just not going to be able to do it." And
a couple times. And one thing in acting, one thing, because I'm also, I write. I was Tyler Perry's head writer, and I've also written a bunch of scripts.
The Madonna family stuff.
One time as a writer, I'd written and directed a film called The Etiquette Man. It was this short film that did real well at festivals, on the cover of USA Today, and it got all this attention.
Won the audience award.
Yeah, at the Dances with Films, and it was really good timing. And then I got a call from the head of this guy at Disney, who brought me out there to talk about turning it into a TV series. And they loved it, and then they paired me with this showrunner, a guy who had been one of the head writers on Saturday Night Live, and we really hit it off. And we went into this meeting, and it was your stereotypical Hollywood meeting where there was this vice president guy. And the first thing he said was, "Oh, I need my celery juice." I was like, "Celery juice?" And he said, "We love your film. And, you know, and we had an idea of doing a TV show." The guy was kind of a modern day Mr. Rogers. And we thought of doing like a kid's show, but really for grown-ups, something like Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And we were very excited. And he goes, "Well, our core audience is 4 to 11-year-old girls." And I was like, did you see the film?
Start right.
And it reminded me of what you said of, you guys are asked to do a TV show, but not do what you're really good at.
Right.
And you just sort of go, okay. But then as an actor, there was times where I was in, this was in the 90s. I had a baby girl, and I was supposed to get this big role in The Time to Kill. And then they said, you know, Warner Brothers is interested in you and all this. And I thought, this is my big break. This was around 94, I think. And I thought, this is it. This is it. And the director said all these nice things, and my head got all big. But then they sent me this script, and they said, "You're playing the Klansman." And I was like, I read the script, and I was like, okay, there's like 300 Klansmen in this movie.
Right.
And they said, "Well, don't worry. He probably really likes you. He's got something in mind." And I ended up going out there, and I shot for like 10 days. And all I was basically is the highest paid background act. I was a Klansman with a hood on.
Right.
And the director didn't even, like, I thought he was coming to hug me, and he was hugging the woman next to me. And he looked at me like, "Who the hell are you?" And I said, "I'm your Klansman."
That's terrible.
And he said, "I've got a lot of Klansmen." I remember I drove like to Mississippi to do it. And I was driving back just thinking, that's it. This is not going to work. And luckily I didn't stick to that.
Yeah.
But there's times where you just go, you know, why am I putting up with all this? Because there's a lot of rejection and stuff. And it's such a subjective profession. It's not like, you know, you don't get a lawyer and go, "Well, you're good, but I needed someone taller." You know, whereas as an actor, there's so many reasons. But literally, if you just stick at it, you know, I took my daughter as an actor too. She's starting out in New York. And I said, if you just work harder than anyone else and be nice to people and keep a sense of humor. And that seems to have worked. And sounds kind of corny, but it kind of, yeah, it's working so far.
Yeah, well, I would say it's working.
It's funny, too, because I was talking to Sean earlier a few months ago, and I was auditioning for the East Coast premiere of The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I really wanted the part. I really did. And it was down to me and one other guy. And it didn't come down to which one of us was the better actor. It came down to which girl they were going to pick and who would look better with that girl.
Oh. That sucks, man.
Wow.
And they said, you know what, Nathan? You have a baby face. And we don't think that you'll look like old enough to be with this other woman. And I was just like, I have a gray beard. How much of a baby face could I possibly have?
Oh, man.
And, wow.
But
yeah,
no.
They told me that for The Walking Dead when they said, initially they said, they've pinned you, which is, I mean, you've pretty much got the part, but they have to see if you're a match for the woman playing your wife, which is, you know, Tova Feltzia.
Yeah.
And I looked her up on IMDb and I thought, I keep thinking I'm still 28 years old. And I thought, well, she's about 6 years older than me. And luckily, then when I got there, they go, oh, you're a perfect couple. And I was like, we are? Well, okay. And, you know, yeah, you just never know. You just never know.
You know, I got to ask, you know, one, normally we have everyone on The Walking Dead the day before they die. So why didn't you come soon?
Yeah. What?
No, literally, we had who was the first? Mike Rooker. We had Mike Rooker on the show, yeah. And he came on. And jokingly, I said, what's everybody going to say when you die next week? And it was a joke. And all of a sudden, there was this dead silence on the air. And Sean and I just looking at each other going, oh, crap.
Yeah, no more Walking
what
Dead.
What did we do? But since then, it's been almost a curse. And fortunately, the gentleman, I can't remember his name off the top of my head now, which I'm a bad host, but who plays Aaron came on and he didn't die.
Yeah.
We keep sending him emails saying, don't die, Aaron.
He's a great guy.
Oh, he is. He is. And, but you know, you were on there and everybody, I gotta say this, everybody just fell in love with you.
Yeah,
because not just were you the reincarnation of Herschel.
That's what it was. Yeah.
That's a nice legacy.
Yeah. But, you know, we live in an age where people are afraid to go out in the snow, but they love watching TV shows where people suffer and have to fight zombies.
Thank God they do.
Yes.
Yep. And your character was like the father figure that everybody was looking up to. And I have to say, as much as it hurt to watch Herschel get axed, I think it hurt even more to see you get axed because we didn't get to know enough of you on the show.
Yeah, you just sort of get that. And it was fun because it was fun to play that because, you know, a lot of times you play characters that are struggling or they're conflicted, and he was just a good guy,
happy-go-lucky,
and yeah. And that's the scene with Noah, which was funny when I read that script. That's the script where he dies later in the script, and I'm reading the beginning of it going, oh, this is great, the beginning of a really cool father-son kind of relationship. Oh, look at the revolving door.
Yeah,
I guess not.
Did they let you see the end of it?
Yeah, it was a shame.
You know how usually they don't let you see they were telling us in the past, some people don't know they're going to die before the day before. Did you know from the get-go?
Well, I knew. There's a couple of things. I got a call from Scott Gimple, who, you know, the showrunner.
Yeah.
And I had a message that said, Scott wants to sit down and talk with you. And I was
that
like,
must be,
oh,
like,
neat.
The worst thing to hear on the set of The Walking Dead.
Shit.
Well, see, this shows how much in denial I was, because I was like, oh, great, he wants to just talk about where my character's going. And then we played phone tag, and then I got another message that said, he wants to talk to you about what's coming up in the finale.
Nice.
And that's when I went, oh, man, I'm going to die. And he was very apologetic.
Yeah.
He said, it's going to be really cool. It's the last scene in the finale episode. And so they were great. They're very, very kind. But yeah, it was kind of like, it's that call that you get on that show.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me back when in the 90s, when the dot-com bubble burst.
Mm-hmm.
My job was to go around and set up like different departments for all these companies. And I was at a I won't say the name of the company. Let's just say it rhymes with Dice Line. And you know, I was in the office that day and they were having this huge meeting and they were going over all this stuff. And everybody who worked for the company was in this big hall and they said, and due to recent drops in this and that and the other thing, we will be laying off 30% of the employees today. God. Please go back to your desk and see if you have a message waiting for you if you are one of the people who were. And I was just like,
have a good day.
It's just like, I'm standing in the back of the room going, wow, I'm really glad I don't work for these guys.
Oh my God.
And it was the big, it was the bubble burst. They had to let people go, but it was just such a, like, you know, and when you have to do it in that scale.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. Oh my
God. Yeah, and I felt for everybody walking out of the room, and I didn't see one person go back to their desk.
Wow. Well, how did you guys get into what you're doing?
Nobody's ever asked us that before.
Yeah, no doubt. 10 years this November was the first time we got asked that on the air by a star.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Steve, it was crazy. I grew up here in Indianapolis, Indiana, on the south side of Indianapolis. Grew up in a spooky house, had weird stuff happening when I was growing up. So I was always fascinated all the way through college about the paranormal, supernatural, stuff like that.
Huh.
Then I would go places where people said the spooks were out there and all this stuff was going on. And I said, okay, I'll go see. And, you know, I went out there and checked some stuff out. And then I ran into Nathan. Right, Nate?
Yeah. What basically happened was Sean and I were both reporters on another radio show. And we were both kind of like called out on what was a vacation / working job in Gettysburg.
Yeah.
And we met up and we were just sitting around in the worst little bar you've ever seen.
Actually, Nate, if you remember right, we weren't on assignment for any show. It was the worst weekend of my life. I just found out I was going through a divorce. young love, right, Steve? Sure. Young love. And this chick says, hey, man, I don't want to be around no more. I just don't want to be married. Nothing personal, right? So, okay, great. So I'm losing everything I built in my young adult life. And I said, you know what? My buddy from the radio show called and said, hey, man, let's get out of town for a while. Let's go to Gettysburg. I got a guy you should meet, and we'll all have some beer and just be buddies and go chill out. And then we went down there to this bar, right, Nate?
Yeah, and I walk in. I've never met this man in my life, and our mutual friend has been building me up to be like this great guy. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And as I walk through the door, Sean gets up, runs over, hugs me, and says, aww, you're buying the next pitcher.
That's right.
And that night we went out and we looked around Gettysburg, and finally we decided, and jokingly I said, you know what? We could do our own show, and so it was born.
Well, and I think a lot of it, Steve, was to, because, you know, we didn't start getting guests like you. I mean, you have to build, you know what I mean? You have to, just like acting, you have to build your, you've seen the bio where I send the begging slip, I call it, where I send it to you guys, and I'm going, look who we've had, and we love you, and this is, you know, and that's how it is, because you guys take this time out of your schedule. You're getting paid nothing to do this. You do it out of the kindness of your heart.
Wait a minute.
Oh, Sean, you forgot to send him the second letter. Sorry.
Just tell him you're doing it for free, Steve. The check's in the mail.
Should have read that more closely.
Remember, Sean, we're talking to the highest paid actor.
I know. Do the math on that one.
Oh,
yeah. But I think that's why we wanted to do it, too, Steve, because, you know, we have a dream about the supernatural and all that stuff, and taking it on the road, and we got close and stuff, and we wanted to interview the guys that we look up to, like you, that have been successful.
Who are some of the first people you got?
Oh, God. Mostly psychics and people that say they're pregnant with aliens, and you name it.
Me.
And then we would get, little by little, we'd get a star on here, somebody that did the local play or something, you know, like somebody local. Yeah. And then
and we were really lucky that they loved coming on our show so much, because we have a different format, that they tell their friends, you should do this show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Well, yeah, I'll do that, depending on how this goes.
See, we better stop on topic. Steve, yeah, you're the
I'm on the fence right now.
Yeah,
it's better to get better.
No, but man, that's why it was. We wanted to get into your world for a while. Look, you started out. I love that. I love to hear the stories. Mike Rooker, now you. All you guys, Mike started out doing trailers. He was cleaning trailers, vacuuming up at night. And during the night, he would during the day, he'd go wait tables. Then they would call, and he'd have to go do a small part somewhere. And then, like you just said, you had to dig ditches and stuff. You know,
literally dug ditches in Georgia clay, no less.
Oh my God!
I have dug ditches. I know the pain.
Fuck yeah!
It builds character. Oh yeah, that's what they say.
Well, it does. Well, it does, actually.
It's funny too, because I talk to people all the time. There are kind of two different actors out there who go out and start their careers in acting. And I think Uber has made a change to this now that people can make money driving their car around. Yeah. But there's there were the waiters would go out and get a job where they could, you know, wait tables, and they made a deal that if an audition came up at a drop of a hat, they had to be able to leave. And that was the waiter gig. And then there were the scrapers. And these were the guys who would take any job that paid well enough to build up a little bit of cash so that if a gig came up, they could just quit the job and leave.
Yeah.
And I was a scraper.
Yeah. I was a scraper and a waiter.
Oh. I only waited one day.
Wow.
Yeah, he was lucky.
Wow.
I got a gig, and I went and did the gig, and the gig only lasted one day, so now I was out of a job. So.
What were you saying, Steve?
Oh, about that, you know, just, and I tell my daughter this, it's about, you get a humility, and also you can tell the actors that I've worked with, I was lucky enough to work with Kevin Costner a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he has not forgotten what it was like, you know, to work for a living and to pay your dues. I was doing an HBO movie in New York last year, and there's a Teamster guy. I was doing a scene where I pull up in a cab and I come rushing out, and the guy, we had to keep, you know, backing up the cab for another take, and there was a Teamster guy from Brooklyn. His name was Tony. And he'd done it a couple of times. We'd been working with each other for about a week, and he looked over the seat and he goes, "Hey, Steve, you've paid your dues, haven't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah, I could tell."
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, because of those jobs, especially like on a film set, you know, it is such a collaborative thing. And the crew, you know, they're there before you're there. They're there after you're there. They bust their butts all day long. Oh, yeah. And you can tell the actors, there's certain actors that treat the crew sort of like, you know, anonymous slave labor. And they don't last too long. And you gotta, it's, you know, especially as an actor, you're like, you're treated really, really well. And not so much in your early career, but you know, you're given a place to stay and they drive you to work and you get free food and M&Ms all day. And it's a pretty great job. And I haven't had much patience with actors that, like, I worked with an actor once that we had this, you know, you get these incredibly catered meals. And she was like, it was after lunch, and she said, "I didn't really care for the lunch, did you?" I was like, "Well, it was a choice between, you know, trout and prime rib. It was pretty good, you know."
What, no,
like,
tacos? Golly.
See, the first time Sean and I got our catered roast meal on beef. The set, they served us literally on top of tombstones.
Yeah,
wow. In New Orleans.
We were out filming, and they were like, they delivered the food, and they were like, "Well, there's no place to eat. Go sit over there." And they were literally pointing at tombstones.
We did,
for us,
Steve,
to sit on. Wow.
Yeah,
that's the big time when you're eating on a grave.
Oh yes. Man, it was those old New Orleans tombstones too, where there's actually coffin parts around, you know, and filth and dirt. And anyway, you know, I was gonna ask you, Steve, because you play Carl so great in Insidious and in The Conjuring. I actually think you're a priest. I mean, I would go to you and confess my sins. I think I'm going to do it after the show.
Yeah.
And yeah. No, but what was it? What's your motivation, or what was your background? Do you have any experience in the paranormal? What's your thoughts on that stuff?
Not really. It's interesting because I don't, not a big, but I have one, there was one event in my life, and I was a freshman at acting school. And
North Carolina.
It was, and this is in North Carolina. And me and I had a roommate, and we had desks that were back to back in this room. And we were both, I was working at something, he was at his desk. And all of a sudden, there was like something wrong in the air. And even talk about it gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
It was as if, you know, it wasn't like I couldn't, it was a presence of just evil. And without even turning, he says, "Steve, look at the picture of Sarah on your desk." I had a picture of my high school girlfriend. Mm. He said, "Just look at Sarah and think good thoughts." And I don't know what that was. It passed after about 3 to 5 minutes. So I do have a, I do think there is an, this is, I believe there's a good in the world. I also think there's an evil in the world.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, you know, just like the Warrens, you know, the couple that did all the, you know, the stories that The Conjuring is based on. You know, they had thousands of cases, and the majority of them were either hoaxes or leaky pipes or whatever, but there were genuine things. And so I do believe in that stuff. It's, yeah. I try to keep it at bay. And but yeah, it's out there. And I think that's one of the reasons it has, I think films like Insidious and The Conjuring, where it's about, it's not a monster, it's actually about a genuine evil. I think that's why it really gets under people's skin, because it's kind of true.
Yeah.
And but I don't like those movies, which is interesting because I'm in some of them.
Really? Because you're in a lot of them.
Oh, no. What did I see? Well, like, you know, American Horror Stories. I see previews for American Horror Story. I just go, nope, not going to watch them.
Well, you know, Sean and I were just.
Crap out of me.
Yeah.
Sean and I were just talking about American Horror Stories, the new one that just came out. And I was saying how I'm enjoying it because I've taken another approach to it this year where it's being played like the My Ghost Story thing. Where the one set of actors are telling the story of what happened to them, and another set of actors are playing it out. And it's I'm actually enjoying it. But I have to ask, because I've had people say this to me in the past, that they went into doing a supernatural movie with absolutely no belief in the supernatural. And then when they came out, they had a belief, because when you open your mind to it, things tend to happen around you. Did anything like that happen for you?
Yeah, I went in. The only thing, it goes back to that sense of evil, because like it was mainly on Insidious 2. We didn't shoot anything in a studio. It was all on locations. And most of the time, you know, there's a crew around and it's not scary. But we were in an old abandoned hospital, and it had been closed for about, 5 to 7 years. And there was a genuine sense of badness there. It was the one place where, you know, as an actor, when you have a little free time on set, you wander around.
Yeah.
I was like a little girl just sitting around where there's a lot of light, because there was a sense of real kind of evil there.
Yeah.
And I talked to a person in the neighborhood, and they said, "Oh yeah, there was a murder rape in the basement." I was like, "Oh great, that's what I need
to
hear."
Great. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't, I was already open to it before. And like I said, you try to just sort of literally just think of thoughts. And it's a little portal that I don't want to open, because I do think it, you know, I remember feeling that actually, you know, a 9/11, when that happened, it was such evil. I thought, that is evil incarnate. That's the evil taking over someone's, you know, not a ghost, but that spirit of just, you know, the absence of light in a human soul, where it's just dark. And I thought that was, you know, watching those towers come down, not to get too dark, whatever. I thought
terrible. That's,
you know, and there is that. You look at Syria, you look at, you know, and it's, but I do think the power of good is a lot more powerful.
That's right.
But again, I won't go see scary movies unless I'm in the band.
You'll just make them.
I'll just make them. I'm too scared to go see them. People will say, like, was it The Visit or something? I was like, yeah, it sounds really good and scary. Not going to see it.
Oh, The Visit. Yeah.
It's funny, too, because just last night I was watching The Walk, which is the tightrope artist who walked one tower to the other. And there's a scene where he walks up and is standing at the base of, I think, the North Tower, and just looking straight up at it. And he's talking about how incredible it is. And just a few years before 9/11, I think it was about 1998, I had done the same thing, walked right below the tower and looked straight up. And it was just so overwhelming. When that movie came, movies don't make me cry. I started to sniffle and tear up during that scene, because I remembered those towers. And you're right. You just get this overwhelming feeling of, you know, somebody took away something we loved. And
yeah, and it's really out there. Yeah. And that's why I think that's one of the reasons I say work hard and be kind to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now that's what we're going to remember. We don't care if you're on TV. If you're kind.
Well, don't say that. That's our whole business.
Oh, sorry.
No, no. We'll remember this radio show, Steve said. Well, hey, we can always put that in with Steve's voice. So I'll edit it. But I'll remember this radio show, fellas. No. Hey, Steve, I know we're keeping you over here a little bit. Hey, what is next for Steve's career? Because you got so much going on. I looked at your IMDb. I know you got a lot of projects in post-production. Yeah,
everything says like filming or pre-production on there, man.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. Well, I haven't done anything in the horror genre. I just finished doing a recurring role on House of Cards, which was a lot of fun. Because funny, because it's one of those shows. It was like Walking Dead. I've watched it from the beginning, and just like when I first did Walking Dead, my first scene was that sort of little cocktail party where all the main cast are there, and part of me, you know, was like, oh yeah, professional actor, I know my work, but the other part was like, oh, there's Rick, there's Michonne. You know, I did the same thing on House of Cards. It was like, oh well, man, look, there's the president.
Oh yeah,
what's her name? And that's fun. And I've got that. I did there's a HBO movie, the one I mentioned earlier, it's Robert De Niro playing Bernie Madoff. And it's directed by Barry Levinson, who did, you know, Diner and Tin Men and all that.
Right.
And that'll be coming out sometime this year on HBO.
Which one is that? That's not The Wizard of Lies,
American
right?
Made?
Yes, The Wizard of Lies, yes. Okay. Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be, not because I'm in it, but it's going to be good. It's for De Niro, it's like a return to those darker characters that he really made his name on versus, you know, all the comedies he's been doing lately. And he's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good. It's really, really, it's horrifying. But, and I got the Tom Cruise movie. Oh, there's one thing that's fun is Hank Azaria has this new series called Brockmire. That is one of the foulest and funniest things I've ever read. And I play,
Coach Pom Pom.
I play Coach Pom Pom, who's this oversexed minor league manager. And I won't spoil, but I don't wear pants for a good part of the time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how Coach Pom Pom is going to read in my mind if I'm looking up there and thinking of you as Reg.
Yes. It's a little different than Red.
Now, see, Steve, you can't hide behind this whole, I do scary movies, but I'm really not into it. And now you do dirty films, but you're really not into it. You can't keep hiding. It's one or the other, man.
Why do you think he makes the big bucks, Sean?
That's right.
Yeah. I'll take my pants off. Yeah. I don't care.
Anyway, Steve, anything coming up, like any festivals or conferences, conventions people can check you out at?
I am. I'm going to a con. Gosh, I wish I remembered the name of it. I think it's called Superheroes and Something at the end of. That's good. Just look up Superheroes and Something.
Superheroes and Something coming.
Somewhere in the country. In the end of October.
Yeah.
I think it's the same weekend as Walker Stalker, so I won't be at Walker Stalker this year. I'm going to be up in New Jersey. And I'll try to put it out. I'm alternately good at Twitter. I haven't tweeted in a while.
Tweeted.
The tweeter.
Oh, my God. But I'll put it out. I'll put it out on my Twitter thing.
Where do people find your tweeter? Do you have a page where people can find all your stuff and follow you?
Dude, I guess it's, what is it, Coulter, Coulter 28, or at Coulter 28, that's my Twitter. That's my Twitter. That sounds foul.
You can touch Steven's Coulter
at Twitter. That's right. Yes, at you Twitter. Can.
Anyway, Steve, you're amazing, sir. With everything you do, we love you and we support your projects. Could you stay on the line 1 second while we close this show?
Yes, sir.
What do you think, Nate? Want to pay these bills?
No, I want to stay on the phone with Steve.
He is such a cool dude. I'm so glad we worked so hard to get him on. Steve, happy birthday coming up, by the way.
Thank you again. I'm looking forward to the check that you're sending.
Well, yeah. $2. Anyway, guys.
You will get all the change in Sean's mayonnaise jar on top of the
TV.
That's it. The one, the only Steve Coulter, everybody. Insidious, The Walking Dead, and of course, The Conjuring. Special thanks to all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Spreaker, the world's listening. How about you? Spreaker.com, check them out. Planet Paranormal, Geeky Antics Network, Serious Geeks, Silly Fun, GeekyAntics.net, Attentive Home Healthcare, AttentiveHHC.com, Good People, ready to help the ones you love, AttentiveHHC.com, and the S-Whale Project. Give some love, share some love, everybody needs that love. The S-Whale Project.
I need love.
Yeah, the S-Whale Project.org. From the haunted back roads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.